The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A memorial service was held yesterday in Arizona for American political activist Charlie Kirk, who was killed at a university event in Utah on September 10th. The service appeared to cross over into political rally at points, with speeches from President Donald Trump and White House Deputy Chief of Staff Stephen Miller alongside Kirk's widow Erica. In a moment, we're going to get full analysis from CNN's John King. But first, here is Kirk's widow Erica speaking at that memorial service.
My husband, Charlie, he wanted to save young men just like the one who took his life. That young man. On the cross, our Savior said, "Father, forgive them, for they not know what they do." That man, that young man, I forgive him.
Well, her message of forgiveness stood in stark contrast to President Donald Trump, who was also speaking at the service.
He did not hate his opponents. He wanted the best for them. That's where I disagreed with Charlie. I hate my opponent, and I don't want the best for them. I'm sorry. I am sorry, Erica. But now Erica can talk to me and the whole group, and maybe they can convince me that that's not right, but I can't stand my opponent. Charlie's angry. Looking down, he's angry at me now. He wasn't interested in demonizing anyone. He was interested in persuading everyone to the ideas and principles he believed were good, right, and true.
And while speaking at Kirk's memorial, Trump veered completely off topic, as he is prone to do. And this is what he had to say, previewing a big announcement that he is expected to make later today.
I think we found an answer to autism. How about that? Autism. And tomorrow we're going to have one of the biggest announcements, really medically, I think, in the history of our country. We're going to be doing it with Bobby and Oz and all of the professionals. I think you're going to find it to be amazing. I think we found an answer to autism. How about that? Autism. Tomorrow we're going to be talking in the Oval Office in the White House about autism, how it happens so we won't let it happen anymore, and how to get at least somewhat better when you have it so that parents can help their child, their beautiful child. That's a big one. I've been bugging everybody over there, get the answer to that.
Well, for full analysis on this and lots, lots more, I am really delighted to be joined in studio by John King, CNN anchor and chief national correspondent. You are very welcome to the studio, and I am actually very glad to see you here in front of me, John King, because you were actually impacted by what was happening at the airports over the weekend, I understand.
My flight was cancelled, but I made it. A little backup plan. It's a delight to be here. The pleasure's mine. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Look, we have to start with that memorial for Charlie Kirk that took place yesterday. I mean, when I initially heard some of the audio on the news this morning, I sort of breathed a sigh of relief when I heard his wife, Erica, talk about forgiveness. It was such a positive line in a week that has been so full of vitriol.
Her message was quite forgiving, very religious, very spiritual, and very courageous in the sense that she is a grieving widow. She's also now the CEO of this political organization. So obviously there are people who disagree with the views of now the deceased Charlie Kirk and with Turning Point USA. But she comes out and she says, let's continue the cause. The main basis of the cause, there are a lot of people in America who disagree maybe with their positions on certain issues, but I look at this as the main goal of Charlie Kirk and now his wife and that organization is to get people to participate, to get people to vote. That's a good thing in a democracy. You want everybody to vote. But then the president came out with such a contrasting message. I hate my opponent. That is striking. Probably not a surprise if you follow Donald Trump all the time, but he has benefited from the support of Christian conservatives like Charlie Kirk, even though much of what he says you would not really put under the umbrella of what the Bible teaches us or what Christianity teaches us. So it's sort of a striking contrast. He's not a religious person himself, and yet he benefits from this movement. The question is, we're in this horrible moment in the United States where you've seen more political violence, and a young father, forget what he does in politics, a young father, a young man, snuffed out in his early part of his career and his life. The question is, politically, what happens going forward? A big focus, global attention on this service yesterday, but really big question marks about what it means, you know, 6 months from now or a year from now when Americans next vote.
I mean, division and political violence isn't a new phenomenon in America. We saw it really acutely in the 60s and the 70s. Do you think this era is different? And if so, what is driving that?
The biggest difference is just the instantaneous communication, social media, smartphones, the internet, that messages of hope, but also messages of hate can travel so quickly. And that if you are in a dark place, if you're having mental health issues, if you feel somehow detached or disaffected or pushed away from society, it's easier to find a place that reinforces your view and that perhaps then triggers your anger and your violence. I think that's what's largely different from the 60s. Are we in that era again? You know, a lot of historians talk about, you know, Robert F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King in the 60s. And I was in the state of Arizona, where Charlie Kirk was from, just a decade ago when a Democratic Congresswoman, Gabby Giffords, was shot at a public event, a town hall in a shopping mall in her district. The president has tried to make the case that this is all about left-wing radical violence. We have a sad history in the United States, even just in the last 10 or 15 years, of political violence where the targets have been members of both parties. Just last year, Democratic lawmakers in the state of Minnesota. So it's unfair to say it's all one party, but that's part of the unfortunate political debate we are in after a very personal tragedy with Charlie Kirk.
I saw the governor of Utah, Spencer Cox, who I thought was brilliant when he spoke out in the aftermath of the shooting of Charlie Kirk. And he was talking about the conflict entrepreneurs who are getting us all addicted to outrage. I thought it was a brilliant line. And I'm wondering, how do we tackle that, do you think? How do we turn down the temperature, and whose responsibility is it to drive that?
Well, it would be nice if political leaders drove that, because they have the platform, they have the stage, they have the bigger audience. I'm of the view as a parent that this is largely going to have to come from the home, starting with parents, trying to help their children through this world they're in. You have children. I have older children and a younger child, and just the difference between the exposure to violence, to the algorithm, to things on social media, to things on their phone is striking just in the, you know, 10 years between them. So I think most of this is going to have to start at home, where everything starts: community at home, and then schools, and then your faith, and then your political structure.
There because was a tackling those social media companies appears to be beyond
politicians. A very different regulatory environment here in Europe than you would have in the United States. A very different view. You mentioned tackling the social media companies, put that under the larger umbrella of free speech, where, again, you know, what I do for a living, what you do for a living, is under attack in the United States right now from the president of the United States, who says that he thinks his critics should be prosecuted, or they should use the power of licensing and other regulatory authority to punish people who he believes are being unfair to him. That's never happened. That's never happened, at least not in modern American history. And so we're at a fascinating moment, big picture, under our Constitution and our cherished right to the First Amendment and free speech. And beneath all of that, you have this idea of, you know, what Governor Cox was talking about is there are a lot of people who profit off hate and division and polarization. And how do you crack that? You know, again, a historian could sit here and say, well, things tend to run in 25 or 30 year arcs, and we're early in that arc, we'll get through it. But it's a crossroads moment, I believe, in, at least in American political discourse right now.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that First Amendment, you talk about that right to free speech and how it should be protected, but it's not being protected, is it? I mean, even loose criticism, even colourful commentary around Trump has come in for his ire. And we saw that, I suppose, last week with Kimmel being removed from being on air. Do you think you're going to see him back, or do you think his time is up?
It's a great question. And again, you know, the president of the United States says, well, the marketplace did this, that viewers were mad at Jimmy Kimmel, therefore the company did what they did. Well, that's not entirely true in the sense that one of Donald Trump's officials said, we can do this the hard way or we can do this the easy way. So you had the government of the United States telling ABC News, you know, you can take care of this yourself or we will use our powers in the government.
Threatening them.
That's a threat. That's the right word. That's a political threat from the government. You can disagree with what Jimmy Kimmel said. You can disagree with what John King is saying right now. That's a cherished freedom. And you have the right to call News Talk and say, can I come in tomorrow and disagree with John King and make the case against him? That is the principle, our First Amendment, that any of us who live in a democracy should cherish. To see the President of the United States trying to chip away at that, trying to decide, you know, his interpretation of who gets to speak and who doesn't is dangerous. It's flatly just dangerous. But that's the moment we're in. And I'm an optimist by nature. Some days it's difficult to be an optimist in this environment. But you know, we have some off-year elections this year in the United States. Then we have a very big midterm election next year in the United States. If you remember 2018, that put the brakes on Trump's first term when the Democrats won big in the midterm election. Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House. That opportunity for the Democrats is a year away. These are the issues. The presidential power, we're talking just about free speech. Donald Trump has had an unprecedented flex, if you will, of trying to use presidential power in a number of ways that are simply unprecedented, whether it's in the court system, whether it's criticizing his opponents, whether it's trying to clamp down on free speech, whether it's trying to, you know, use his powers for immigration and kicking people out of the United States. I could be here through the Christmas holidays talking about all the things Donald Trump is doing that we've never quite seen before. His critics are appalled by this, horrified by a lot of it. The way we settle this, to come back to where we began, should not be violence. It should be through elections. If you disagree, let's see who can turn out the most votes next year.
Yeah, and you say, look, they are horrified by this. And I have friends in the United States who have been in touch with me. I would say they're all Democrats and they are genuinely concerned and genuinely worried about their future of their country. But among Republicans in the United States, what is their reaction to all of this? Do they have the same levels of outrage as we're seeing here in Ireland and across Europe?
Donald Trump has completely redefined, even repopulated, the Republican Party in the United States, where you had, even at that Charlie Kirk Memorial Service, Marco Rubio, now the U.S. Secretary of State, who, remember, ran against Donald Trump back in 2016, said Donald Trump was a cancer on the Republican Party, said he was not a conservative, said he was not a genuine Republican. Now he's part of the Trump administration. Trump has, sometimes through convincing people, but often through warning people, threatening people. If you oppose me, I will run a primary against you. We will defeat you. You have a lot of Republicans who are afraid of Donald Trump, plain and simple. Governor Cox, I think, is a great example of a conservative out in a state, a true conservative, a pre-Donald Trump Republican who says, you know, love your neighbor. Let's cherish free speech. Let's find a better way to disagree. Will there be, you know, Donald Trump? There are some who think he will try to stay in power in 2028.
Do you?
Well, I can't answer that question because I can't read his mind. I think you saw at the memorial service yesterday, Vice President Vance, Secretary of State Rubio, you did see a future of the MAGA movement, if you will, the next generation trying to establish some of its footing at this. We'll deal with the 2028 question when we get there. But if you have an open Republican primary, I do think that's when you will see, can the George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan Republican Party have a resurgence, or is that party dead and gone and there will be something new that emerges? Or does MAGA stay in control of the party? We can't answer that question. Both parties, both the Democratic and the Republican Party in the United States of America, are going through generational and ideological and other policy debates and, you know, revolutions in a polite way. I'm reluctant to use certain language sometimes because of the moment we're in. And we'll see how these things play out.
Are CNN, somebody like you with such a profile within CNN, are you scared of Donald Trump? and the power that he might exercise over your station?
No, I'm not personally. And I want to make a point that, you know, I'm not anti-Trump. I'm not anti-anybody. I'm trying to cover the news as fairly as possible. Donald Trump lies a lot. That's just a fact. It's just a fact. Donald Trump says a lot of things that are not true. And so when you call that out and point that out, people will say you're anti-Trump. No, Tuesday comes after Monday. And if he says it doesn't, I have to say he's not telling the truth. So I believe it's critical in our business to do that dispassionately, to do it calmly, to not make it personal. If you have a personal fight with Donald Trump, he's very effective at branding and attacking and coming after you. I think we need to do our jobs. I think we need to take the names out of it. It's not about Trump. It's not about Republicans. It's about the truth, and it's about the facts, and we have to be dispassionate about it. And again, I'm born an optimist, and so I think we will get through this. But it's a very difficult time at the moment, and yes, people in our business are going to be criticized by him. Again, I was about to say attacked. I'm even reluctant. I do think all of us
we're trying to just take the heat
out
of this.
And some people say why, right? But we do sometimes view politics too much as sports, and we're keeping score every day and every minute as opposed to taking a breath. So I think we can all reflect on our language. But in terms of if Donald Trump says something that is not true, that cannot be supported by the facts, we must not back down from doing our jobs. And we should apply the same passion to that if a Democrat says that, or somebody out of politics, a corporate CEO says that. That's our job. And we need to do that job dispassionately and fairly, but aggressively.
One of the things I think that has really confused the minds of Irish people, and something I think that plays on their mind, is the position that America is taking, and the American government and Donald Trump, in relation to what's happening in Israel and what's happening in Gaza in particular. I think so many of us are just so horrified by what we're seeing every single day. Can you help us to understand their position, to understand where they're coming from? And do you have any hope that that position will change?
I think we judge things in our business by the facts on the grounds and what has happened. And I know that frustration began when Joe Biden was president. Joe Biden was a longtime supporter of Israel, and there was a great deal of frustration. Why didn't he put more public pressure on the Netanyahu government? Why didn't he suspend arms sales? Why didn't he? There were a couple of times where the Biden administration tried to get tough. Let's just be honest. President Biden, as we now know more about, was not up to the challenge of making the public debate. There may have been private conversations with Netanyahu, but he did not lead a public debate about where's the line. Yes, there was a terrorist attack on October 7th, but are we at the point now where it's disproportionate? Are we at the point now where you must absolutely let humanitarian aid in? Are we at the point where the United States government is going to say, we will break from you? You know, Biden was not going to do that. Trump and Netanyahu, if you were frustrated under Biden, Trump has given Netanyahu a green light. And he keeps saying, you know, we're going to come back to these negotiations, just like he says we're going to solve the Ukraine. You know, Trump keeps saying, you know, wait, wait, wait. Here we are, you know, and we know what's happening. And so I always say, not pay no attention, but don't get caught up in what he says, get caught up in what is actually happening. And he has given Netanyahu a green light, not only in Gaza, but there's been an expansion as well in the West Bank and the occupied territories. And you see the reaction just this past weekend, you know, more countries coming forward to recognize Palestine. Essentially, it's an implicit way of almost begging the United States to get more involved and more active here, recognizing the unique role the United States has here. But Donald Trump has shown zero willingness to do that. The United Nations General Assembly is this week. That would be a moment if you wanted to say enough, but don't look for that from the United States.
And we just have a texter. Damo has texted in here. Welcome home, John King. He says, always good to hear your voice. I hope you enjoy a pint in Kyo's when you're in Ballyconnelly. Now, we have an awful habit in this country of trying to claim people as one of our own. You know, they're one hundredth Irish. But actually, you really have strong links, and you're going to be, I suppose, looking into those and celebrating those over the next couple of days.
I am celebrating them. I'm actually going to Epic, to the Emigration Museum, when I leave here too, to get a full briefing on it. But my grandfather, my father's father, came from Galway, last time I was here, I was up there in the Clifton area, in the Dunlochan area, and I saw his attendance records and his grades at the school. So it's been heartwarming for me to come to a better understanding of my Irish heritage. So yes, I'm sitting in Dublin today, but I'm a Galway guy. That'll get me in trouble with sport fans out there. But it has been heartwarming for me in the last couple of presidential elections to come to a full understanding, number one, of how engaged the Irish people are. And that's a blessing for us in the States. And on the question you just raised, you know, again, I can't take sides, but it is fascinating to watch at this moment when the world, which, you know, just think of the post-World War II generation, which, you know, the European alliance, whether it's NATO, whether it's trade, whether it's security issues, whether it's just the love of democracy and protecting democracy, we're at a moment where a lot of Europe is looking at America and saying, you know, what is happening here? Why is this so different? So for me to connect to my own personal roots, it helps me, it fulfills my life to learn more about my own personal history, but it also helps me as a journalist, the more friends I have across the pond, as we say, helps me understand your perspective.
John King, it was a real pleasure to talk to you. There is so much more on my list of questions here. And if you do want to hear more from John King, he is in Ireland for an evening with Events with John King and Dermot MacDonald. They take place in this month, September 23rd, in the Town Hall Theatre in Galway, and September 24th, I think. September 23rd in the NCH and September 24th in Galway. So do look into those if you want to see more. John, thanks so much and enjoy the rest of your break.
Thank you. Have me back sometime. It's a delight.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.